Morning, family. It's good to see all of you here this morning. Good to see our visitors. If you'd be willing to fill out one of the white cards on the back of the pew in front of you, we'd appreciate that. We'll have you pass them to the center when Ron comes up to close us in announcements this morning. So I came to a realization about myself this morning. There is a limit of coffee that I'm supposed to drink on Sunday. As I was sitting there and Johnson was leading singing, and we stood up for I Stand Amazed, right? And I thought I was going to pass out. I was like, whoa. So if I pass out during the sermon, don't worry about it. It's just too much coffee. We're going to be in Ezekiel chapters 18 through 24 this morning, really only looking at chapters 18 and 22 as we get into it. I know that last time we were in the book of Ezekiel, I spent our time in chapter 18, and we're going to be referring back to that. I think maybe just a little bit of a refresher course on what we've been studying in Ezekiel is due, since we haven't been here for a while. Yeah, but before we get into that, we do have an understanding that Christianity is more than just worship on Sunday mornings, right? Yeah, it's actually more than just that and any personal devotion that we're doing, whether it's individually or as a family. But when we start talking about Christianity, I'd like for us to come to a good understanding that the idea of what it means to follow Jesus is that it is a matter of living righteously everywhere. Now, that can be at home, that's at work, that's at the store. Wherever you find yourself, that's what Christianity is about. That's what following Jesus is about, is living as a righteous person everywhere, all the time. And Ezekiel kind of gives us a glimpse into the life of the Jewish people and a people who have forgotten that when God called them out of the land of Egypt, he called them to live righteously no matter where they were. And the point that he makes in chapter 18 is that, hey, the only reason that you guys are suffering, the only reason that judgment is coming, is because you have failed to live a righteous life. When you go back to chapter 18 and you look at just verses, we'll start, I think, in verse 5 and read a few verses there. He says, but if a man is righteous and practices, this is the word I want us to focus on here, practices justice and righteousness, that means that this is something that is engaged in on a regular basis, and does not eat at the mountain shrines or lift up his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel or defile his neighbor's wife or approach a woman during her menstrual period. If a man does not oppress anyone but restores to the debtor his pledge, does not commit robbery, but gives his bread to the hungry and covers the naked with clothing. If he does not lend money on interest or take interest, if he keeps his hand from iniquity and executes true justice between man and man, if he walks in my statutes and my ordinances so as to deal faithfully, he is righteous and will live. So there's this concept that God is presenting to the people in chapter 18 that it is their unrighteousness that is cause for the punishment and suffering that is coming to Jerusalem and Judah as a nation. And it covers every aspect of their lives. They are not living righteously in their marriages. They're not living righteously in their sex lives. They're not living righteously in their religious lives with the idolatry, their government, commerce, etc., etc. They are failing completely as a people in all of this. And if they miss the point of what Ezekiel was telling them in chapter 18, God's going to make it very clear in chapter 22 what the specifics of their unrighteousness are. And Ezekiel 22 covers politics, it covers economics, it covers the religious factors of Judah's downfall. This is the why, okay, in case they were wondering. And I want to make it clear, before we even get into all of this, that their judgment as a nation is not coming because of one or two people in the nation. Okay? It's not even coming because of one or two groups of people in the nation. Everyone is guilty, according to what we read in Ezekiel 22 and verse 18, where God says, Son of man, the house of Israel has become dross to me. All of them are bronze and tin and iron and lead in the furnace. They are the dross of silver. And you jump down to verse 26. He gets into her priests have done violence to my law. Verse 27, her princes within her are like wolves. Verse 28, her prophets are smearing whitewash and seeing false visions. Verse 29, the people have practiced oppression. So it's not just that the leadership of Judah is corrupt. It is. But that's not the only reason that God's punishment is coming upon Judah. And it's not because their priests and prophets are corrupt. They are. But that's not the only reason that God's punishment is coming. It's everyone in Judah. Everyone. And that's going to be an important factor when we start looking at this. But we need to look back a little bit. When God led Israel out of Egypt, he had a very specific plan, a very specific purpose for them. Our reading this morning that Dylan brought us from Isaiah 49, verse 6, talking about them being a light to the nations. If you turn in your Bibles to Isaiah chapter 42, we get another little explanation there from God about that in Isaiah 42 and verse 5, where he says, "Thus says the Lord God, who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread out the earth and its offspring, who gives breath to the people on it, and spirit to those who walk in it. I am the Lord. I have called you in righteousness. I will also hold you by the hand and watch over you, and I will appoint you as a covenant to the people, as a light to the nations, to open blind eyes, to bring out prisoners from the dungeon and those who dwell in darkness from the prison. I am the Lord. That is my name. I will not give my glory to another." So God is establishing his plan in Israel to bring the message of salvation to the nations, that everyone is going to get a chance to see this based on how Israel is living as a nation, right? So you look at Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 7. This is what the people were supposed to say when they saw Israel and how they were in operation, right? "For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as is the Lord our God whenever we call on him?" This is how the nations were supposed to see Israel. And through all of this, God's law that's given to the people on Mount Sinai through Moses, God's law was meant to guide them in their lives in how to be a righteous people. Okay? And this righteousness is meant to be seen, again, in every part of their lives. When you look at Deuteronomy chapter 12, or chapter 10 and verse 12, it says, "Now Israel, what does the Lord your God require from you? But to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways and love him, to serve the Lord your God, with all your heart and with all your soul." So this set the standard right here for them as a community, all right? And the basis of their relationships is going to fall back on this simple statement, that you shall love him and serve him with all your heart and with all of your soul. This is the basis, because loving God and serving him leads to meaning in life, okay? And this love is actually the foundation of their stewardship and generosity, or how they treat their neighbor. When you look at Deuteronomy chapter 15, When you look at Deuteronomy chapter 15, we'll start at verse 1 there. It says, "At the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a remission of debts." This is the manner of remission. "Every creditor shall release what he has loaned to his neighbor. He shall not exact it of his neighbor and his brother, because the Lord's remission has been proclaimed." Remember, they've been pulled out of Egypt. They have been brought in as God's people, and their love for him is now being communicated to each other in generosity here, right? "From a foreigner you may exact it, but your hand shall release whatever of yours is with your brother. However, there will be no poor among you, since the Lord will surely bless you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance to possess. If only you listen obediently to the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandment, which I am commanding you today. For the Lord your God will bless you as he has promised you, and you will lend to many nations, but you will not borrow. And you will rule over many nations, but they will not rule over you. If there is a poor man with you, one of your brothers in any of your towns in your lands, which the Lord your God has given you, you shall not harden your heart nor close your hand from your poor brother, but you shall freely open your hand to him and shall generously lend him sufficient for his need and whatever he lacks. Beware that there is no base thought in your heart saying, 'The seventh year, the year of remission is near,' and your eye is hostile toward your poor brother and you give him nothing. Then he may cry to the Lord against you, and it will be a sin in you. You shall generously give to him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him, because for this thing the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all your understandings. For the poor will never cease to be in your land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy and poor in your land. If your kinsman, a Hebrew man or woman, is sold to you, then he shall serve you 6 years. But in the seventh year, you shall set him free. When you set him free, you shall not send him away empty-handed. You shall furnish him liberally from your flock and from your threshing floor and from your wine vat. You shall give to him as the Lord your God has blessed you. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you this today. It shall come about if he says to you, I will not go out from you because he loves you and your household, since he fares well with you. Then you shall take an awl and pierce it through his ear into the door, and he shall be your servant forever. Also you shall do likewise to your maidservant. It shall not seem hard to you when you set him free, for he has given you 6 years with double the service of a hired man. So the Lord your God will bless you in whatever you do. Okay, love God, serve him with all your heart, soul, mind, strength. Now we get how we deal with each other as a community on the economic scale. If your brother is in need, there's always going to be poor. Help him out. Do what's right. And remember that God brought you out of the land of Egypt and he redeemed you. So this is the law. This is how it's going to work. This will be a part of their economic system, but also their judicial system. Because you look at Deuteronomy chapter 16, starting in verse 18, God says, you shall appoint for yourself judges and officers in all your towns, which the Lord your God is giving you, according to your tribes, and they shall judge the people with righteous judgment. So, we could say that if an individual who is being released in the year of Jubilee is going to be led away and walked away, and that it's a burden now for the individual that's being set free, we can go back to Deuteronomy 15, see that that's not what God was talking about, and the owner of the individual or the landowner, whatever, doesn't like it. Well, now the individual, the slave or the former slave, has a judicial avenue to get what God has commanded be given to him, right? So these are the ways that things are supposed to be going. You shall not distort justice. This is verse 19 of Deuteronomy 16. You shall not be partial. You shall not take a bride, for a bride blinds the eyes of the wise and perverts the words of the righteous. I think I said bride there earlier. I meant to say bride. Justice and only justice you shall pursue, that you may live and possess the land which the Lord your God is giving you. I want us to notice something here, guys. If Israel as a people fails to hold to this first standard, to love God and to serve him with all their heart and soul, they cannot love their neighbor. And because they cannot love their neighbor, they cannot love justice. Because you will only love justice if you love God. You will only love your neighbor if you love God. Because it's from that love that all of life flows. And that's what God was trying to teach his people from the law. That all of the commandments that God had given them in the law were possible. Now, they're not going to be able to do it perfectly, but they had to practice it and they would be righteous because of their love for God. And this is what happened in Judah. By the time we get to the point that Ezekiel is prophesying, they have completely forsaken. They have a total disregard of righteousness in their relationships, first with God and then with each other. And it leads to a catalog of sins. If you're not there yet, go back to Ezekiel 22 and let's go through it real quick. And keep in mind everything we just read from Deuteronomy, okay? Because in Ezekiel 22 and verse 6, we see that power is being used to shed blood. In verse 7, treating parents with contempt, oppressing foreigners, making people fatherless, and oppressing the widows. Verse 11 and following, we've got sexual sin. Jump down to verse 25, we have conspiring to steal through murder. Verses 8 and 26, violence is being done to the law. Chapter 22 and verse 27, violence is occurring in the leadership. And then again in verse 29, all of the people are engaged in oppression and robbery. Every claim that God has against his people here in chapter 22 is based on the fact that they have forsaken their love for him. Every claim. And when their love for him fails, the natural outcome is a lack of love for each other, which leads to injustice. So by the end of the chapter of Ezekiel 22, we see God searching. And he's looking for something relatively simple. He's looking for one man. Right? Look at what it says there in verse 30. He says, I searched for a man among them who would build up the wall and stand in the gap before me for the land so that I would not destroy it, but I found no one. No one in all of the land of Judah could be found who would be able to stand in the gap, right? To build up this wall and stand in the gap before God on behalf of the land. And I had some difficulty with this as I was looking at it, because it's hard when you hear that there's all of these people living there and not a single righteous person, not a single person living righteously, practicing righteousness and justice and doing all of these different things. When you read books like Habakkuk, where there's obviously a remnant of righteous people still there. And so the only conclusion I can come to is it's not that there wasn't a single righteous person, because there probably was maybe one. The issue is that among those who are striving to live righteously, that not a single person was willing to stand for justice. Not a single person who saw their neighbor extorting and oppressing their neighbor was willing to go to that neighbor and say, "You are wrong. This is not the way God has called us to live as a community." Not a single one was willing to take a stand. And isn't it strange to think that it would only take one man for God to relent? He only wanted one guy to do that. But when it comes down to it, didn't that's what God is looking for. One man who sees injustice happening around him, and because of his love for God and because of his love for his neighbor, refuses to let it go unchallenged. And here's the deal, guys. It's not like they couldn't see what was going on. They could. It's that nothing was done. So here's the question. Are we as blind as those living in Jerusalem? Because just as a refresher course, they weren't. They lacked the courage to do what God called them to do. Ezekiel chapter 22 and verse 1. Son of man, will you judge the bloody city? Then cause her to know all her abominations. It's an interesting little phrase there at the end of that verse. Cause her to know all her abominations. And I know that we live in a society that tells us that we shouldn't judge and blah, 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 blah. But actually, when you look at it, when he says, will you judge? He's asking a very pertinent question here, because what he's really asking is, are you able to recognize the distinction between righteous and unrighteous? So let's say that God is asking us that question this morning. Are you able to distinguish the difference between righteous and unrighteous? Answer that question to yourself real quick. It should take like 2 seconds. Then confront the unrighteousness, is God's response. We are able to distinguish the difference between righteousness and unrighteousness, right and wrong, aren't we? And so God's message to Ezekiel here, God's message to us in this is then, according to the NIV says, confront her abominations. The New Living will say, denounce her abominations. The English Standard says, declare to her abominations. Declare, denounce, confront what is wrong. Don't just stand there and let your neighbor be oppressed. One man who just won't stand for it. And understand this too. Adding the concepts that we've been talking about in this, I think that, and we talked about this several months ago, the easiest thing to say to a person is you're wrong. That's the easiest thing to say, right? Raise your hand if you can go around town this week and tell people that they're wrong on any given subject. All day long. Yeah, we could do that all day long, right? Guy cuts you off in traffic, and you're like, you're probably the guy that wouldn't loan me a pencil in school. It's easy to tell someone that they're wrong. But that's not what God's calling us to do. We confront the wrong by presenting the right. That we're not just a people that God is calling to go out there and tell everybody that they're wrong. But we've got to be a people that declares what is right. We don't keep it to ourselves, but we live righteously everywhere. We practice it. We make it a part of our daily lives. And I know a lot of times we find ourselves struggling with this concept of living righteously in all aspects of our lives, right? Because I think when it comes to certain areas of our lives, the majority of us would say, oh yeah, I can live righteously under columns A, B, C, and D really easily. It's over here on E and F that I really struggle with being righteous on this. And I don't want to go around telling people that they got to live righteously in their whole lives when I'm struggling with this. That just makes me a hypocrite, doesn't it? No, it doesn't. Because if you're struggling with it, that means you're still trying to get better. And through the grace of God, He leads you. Because isn't that what He said in Isaiah 42? I will take you by the hand so that you can be a light to the nations, a salvation to the people, to open the eyes of the blind. He helps us in those struggles. He guides us. And as long as we continue to pick ourselves up and dust ourselves off, I think I read this somewhere in the book of 1 John, confessing our sin, then He is faithful to continue in that help and forgiveness. That just because you're struggling in one area of your life and being righteous doesn't make you a hypocrite when you go tell other people what living righteously looks like. It just means that you're taking it seriously. Are we a people who love God? Are we a people who love our neighbor? Love for God and love for neighbor demands a love of justice. It demands that when we see our neighbor being oppressed, we take a stand. It demands that we show to those that we come into contact with the same love that God showed to us in His Son. And that we show them what God's purpose is for life so that they can look at us and the lives that we live can say, what people are there on the face of the planet whose God is so near to them and so wise because of what God has done for them? Let's be that people this week. Let's be that people, not just this week, because that would just be a short time to do it. Let's just continue to be that people as we live our lives. And maybe you're not that people right now. Maybe you find yourself struggling with this whole concept of righteous living as a practice and how God has meant for that to be a part of every aspect of our lives, inwardly and outwardly. And you find yourself struggling with it and you need some help. Well, that's why we're here this morning, to encourage, to strengthen, to pray for each other in our times of weakness. And maybe you're with us this morning, you're ready to become His people, recognizing that through one man, truly righteous, Jesus, God provides this avenue of life for us today, that through His death, His burial, His resurrection, we have the promise of life. He takes us by the hand and leads us. Confess His name as Lord. Be baptized for the forgiveness of sin. Whatever we can do for you today, we encourage you. Make it known by coming forward while we stand and sing.